alive.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Live at the Ghost Hunter Store. It's our first broadcast, so we're having a little snafu here getting connected. But we got a helping hand, so we'll get started. This is going to be a program all about the paranormal. We're going to cover a lot of different topics over the weeks. It's basically going to be a format for South Jersey Ghost Research, the Ghost Hunter Store, the Shadowlands website, and Las Vegas Society of Supernatural Investigations, a place where we can all kind of put our two cents in, and that way we can cover a wide variety of topics. My co-host is Marty Haynes. She's been with me, working with South Jersey Research for over 4 years. She's a psychic medium and many other skills, and gives you a whole other aspect of the paranormal, more to the spiritual side. Right now, I'm going to try to get a hold of our guest tonight, who is Tina Carlson. She's the director of Las Vegas Society of Supernatural Investigations, and she's also the co-director of the Shadowlands website. Been my partner working that site for over 14 years. So let's see if we can get her on the line here.
Hello?
Hi, Tina. You're on the air now.
Okay.
We figured out our issues here, so I already introduced you.
Okay.
My first question, I really want to know, I know we had kind of prepped a little bit for this interview last night, but I came with a whole bunch more questions to ask you.
Okay.
Basically, how did you get interested or get started early on? You have some experiences in your childhood that got you really into this field. Could you talk about a couple of them and how it got you like set on the path to becoming, you know, a ghost investigator yourself?
Well, I experienced I had spinal meningitis when I was 2 years old, and almost died. My parents were told to go ahead and prepare the funeral because I wasn't going to make it. And I was in a coma, and I went down the proverbial tunnel of light to the end. And this woman met me, and she said, "It's not your time yet." And she took me by the hand and led me back. And I woke up and I was fine. And I kept telling people that there was a woman there with me. There was a woman that helped me. And nobody understood what I was talking about. Till a few years later, I happened to be looking through a photo album, and I spotted the woman. And she was a sister of my grandmother, and she had passed long before I had my illness. And that's what pretty much started me. My mother would say that I would see things from that point on that nobody else could see. And then I got interested in it when I was a teenager, and we got chased out of our house in Iowa by something that came into my bedroom. And ever since then, I've just really, really been involved in the paranormal.
Do you think it gives you like an edge or an advantage when you're helping the people through LVSSI that you've experienced the stuff for so long?
I think I can understand what they're going through because I've been scared myself.
You're hearing security in the background right now. That's not... We can talk right over them. Sorry.
I've gotten scared in my past, so I know what they're going through in their own homes. And it makes me understand them better and understand what they're going through, and I can sympathize and I can empathize with what they're feeling.
I think it's pretty neat that there's that you have people like you and many others that can really, that we've been in the shoes of the people, so we understand completely what it's like. That gives a whole other aspect of it, or a better understanding for the people anyway. They can understand that we know exactly what they felt.
You can make them feel comfortable because we felt the same things. We've been through the same things with them, yeah.
I think it makes a huge difference. That's really great. We were checking out your webpage, which, LVSSI.org, correct?
Right.
And we saw on there cemetery preservation you did. And that was something I wasn't aware of. I saw you have a bunch listed and there's a bunch more pending. Is that something you guys got into for a reason?
Well, we found a couple of them, ones that weren't being taken care of. And so we went and we picked up, they're out in the middle of the desert. And we went out and we picked up trash and we fixed fences. Some of these head markers, tombstone type things, are made of wood and they're falling apart. There's no names on them. Some of them, they're dated in the 1800s. And so what we did was we went out and we repaired the crosses made of wood and we repaired the fences that are around the graves themselves and picked up trash. And Memorial Days, we'll go out and we'll put out flags on the ones that we know are marked veteran and things like that.
That's something we don't have to deal with on the East Coast anyway, with wooden tombstones.
I know
a lot of that. I mean, we have a lot of stuff that's knocked over or things that are repairable. But is there anything you can do for the wooden tombstones at all, or is there anybody out there that specializes in maybe replacing them or repairing them?
Not so much that we've met, but my husband does a lot of work with wood, so he'll go out and he'll repair them with wire or nails or something like that, just to make them resemble a cross again rather than just two pieces of wood lying in the sand.
If any of you haven't been to their site, it's a great site, and they have some really good pictures of them cleaning up the cemeteries, which is something that more and more paranormal groups are doing. It kind of like is good public relations for us too.
Well, you were my inspiration, Dave. You told me you did it, and so I started doing it too.
And we get blamed a lot for, I think, the vandalism.
Yeah.
You know, the people that they point to are the ghost people, because we're most likely out in the cemeteries after dark. So I think it's a good deed too. We spend a lot of time in the cemeteries.
It's good karma comes back to you.
Right, and you guys do a fantastic job. I saw the pictures of you like hanging a sign up and repairing the fences and stuff, and that goes beyond what, you know, a lot of the groups do even. So, you know, kudos to you for that.
Well, thank you.
We were also looking on the website here, and I think there was one investigation that a lot of people will probably recognize the name of the location, the Goldfield Hotel. It's been on TV. I remember reading about it in books as a local famous haunting out there. Could you tell us a little bit about what you guys found out there? Or I know you got some access to some other buildings nearby too, right?
We were able to do the high school. We were able to actually go into the high school, which is, again, dated in the 1800s, and that is now an historical landmark. The owner was able to let us go in at night into the high school. We're not granted access yet to the hotel. We're working on that. The high school was really interesting because it still had a lot of the things left over from when it was a high school. They still had blackboards and things like that on the walls with the high schoolers' actual writing still on the chalkboards. And it's just a really, they were having activity there, and we had been talking to the locals for quite a few years, and we were finally granted access to go into the high school. And it was just amazing in there. I mean, every different room had something going on in it. I remember walking into a coat room, and I felt that there was one of the elderly women teachers that was standing there, and suddenly I saw her looking in the mirror, you know, and the mirror wasn't there anymore. I just saw her in my head, and I knew she had worked there before.
What's the history of that? That's kind of odd that you have a place that's abandoned like that with still the writing still on the.
Well, they're trying to restore it, and they're trying to leave as much of the actual high school memorabilia in the school itself. But they are turning rooms that they didn't feel were historical prominent into things like there's a gym for the people who work in the high school restoring it, and they also have a makeshift bar in there. High school and a bar doesn't really go together, but that's what they're doing to it, and they've gotten grant money from the government to restore it back to its original condition.
And you're the only group that had access to that, right? You're the first.
So far, yes.
It's always nice to be the first.
Yes, it is.
And I'm sure by you guys having it on the page, that makes people who aren't aware that maybe there was other buildings out there.
Right.
And that the history of it and everything, that kind of brings all that out to the forefront, too. So we do a lot of advertising in this field for historic locations. So that's another little thing we do that goes unnoticed by many people in the general public. You did the cemetery out there too, didn't you?
Right. And now this is a cemetery that was actually relocated from the town. They had taken, the railroad was going through Goldfield, and so they had taken the cemetery, the bodies, the stones, and moved them outside of town and reburied them. There were murderers, barmaids, these tombstones said, sheriff, and a guy who, there was an old stone marked death caused by eating paste. just really old things like that. And it kind of made you laugh, but it kind of made you think, too, how unhappy were they by being moved once, you know?
Right.
But it dated back as far as old as the town. And we experienced some things out there when we were out there at night, too. We heard what sounded like a woman in a long dress with her dress dragging along the ground. And another time we went out and we just felt really uncomfortable. We were in the oldest part of the cemetery where some murderers had been buried. And we just felt really uncomfortable. We didn't stick around that night. We just felt we weren't really wanted there, so we left.
I didn't realize there was, I mean, we're used to it out here in, I guess, the New Jersey, Pennsylvania area with the relocation of cemeteries. It's very common. Do they do the same thing out there with, did they just move headstones, or did they actually reinter the bodies?
Well, according to the sign that we read and the people we talked to, we took the historical tour through town, and according to the people we talked to, they actually dug up everyone with the stones and relocated them. But again, this was back in the 1800s, early 1900s. So, you know, there's nobody to say, yep, that's what we did. You know, we just have to take them by their word.
Yeah, they tend to all say that.
Right.
The town was an old mining town, right? It was abandoned for a while?
Goldfield, yeah. I think it always had people living there. It's the main buildings are still there. It's just that there's not a whole lot of people. I think the population is about 100, maybe a little more.
Are there chances of you getting into other buildings out there too?
Well, Red, who owns the Goldfield Hotel, he wants anybody who comes in there now to buy liability insurance to be able to come in. Now, that can be a little costly. I don't know if you've ever had to deal with that before. But
a few places asked for it. We've looked into it years ago. I'm not aware of any group personally that has ever gotten it, but it is pricey, and for most of us, since we're mostly nonprofit, and we do fundraisers to, you know, raise whatever money we can to cover equipment and travel costs and everything. It's prohibitive because of the cost. So I hope not many people go down that road, but they might consider doing, a lot of places have assigned releases.
Yeah.
Where we just release them of liability, and That might
right.
go too.
And we asked if we could do that, and the owner has had some bad experiences in the hotel with some other people, and doesn't want anybody else in there unless they have liability insurance.
So are there ghost groups out there that cause them problems?
Ghost groups from around the country have been out there.
So that's what we had issues over here in Gettysburg. A couple of locations that used to be open generally to anyone. If you stayed there, they gave you a free run of the place overnight. And it was just a few people that basically wanted to play Ghost Hunter for the night. And wound up, you know, messing things up for everyone else because they've cut everyone off. They don't let any people in there at all now. So it's a shame when that happens.
We've even suggested that, you know, we would take tours through there and they could keep the money as long as we had, you know, alone access into the hotel itself. But the owner wasn't interested in that.
That's a shame because that would help bring in money for the location plus the publicity can make it more. I mean, it's already a well-known area, but I don't know how much traffic they get. It would definitely increase tourists.
Coming up in August, in the third weekend of August, the 21st, they are having Goldfield Days there. And we thought maybe we could lead tours through because Goldfield Days do attract a lot of people from Nevada and they do historical bus rides and talk about different things that have happened in the town. And we thought, well, you know, we could, if we could have access to the hotel, maybe we could take people through there and charge a fee, you know, and give all the money back. But again, the owner wasn't interested. He doesn't live in Goldfield itself. He lives in Reno, so it's a little hard to talk to him face-to-face.
Right. I know when me and Marty were talking about everything for the show, looking at your page again, there was something I know she wanted to ask about, the spirit removal.
Yeah, I have a lot of people that tell me they do spirit removal, and things that they do are just not respectful to the spirits. But Dave was telling me a lot about how you do the spirit removal, and it sounds so much more respectful for the spirits and helpful to them. Could you kind of explain how you do it?
Well, just recently, one of my members, Matthew, has become an ordained minister, and he helps a lot with that. He helps a lot with the prayers and the holy water and things like that. What we do is we just suggest, you know, that maybe there's a better place for them than that actual house, and for them to look around for family members or past loved ones that may be able to help them on their way. And, you know, we give them a choice. We don't demand, we don't provoke, we don't do things like that. We just go in and we say, listen, you know, you're disturbing this family here and you need to move on. Is there any other place that you'd prefer to be? Because this family doesn't really want you here anymore, and we're sorry that you're stuck here, but maybe if you look around and find a family member or a loved one that's passed over, they'll help guide you on your way to the next level.
You don't see too many groups that honestly are legitimately doing it. More groups that advertise it wind up either doing something more that's provocation or a simple house cleansing that might just, you know, solve a problem temporarily. Or they're looking to charge somebody for results that you can never prove anyway.
Promise, yeah.
But, you know, it's great when you hear that there's other groups out there that are doing it respectful to the living and the dead. Because, I mean, that's a big key. And not forcing anything upon them, giving them the choice, letting them exercise their free will. You know, and you're going to get a lot more results with that anyway because you're going to gain some trust from the spirit.
Well, it's been very successful for us. We've never had a client return and say it didn't work. So that's a good thing.
Well, it's easier on the spirit if you kind of help them along and just help them across instead of, you know, helping them find someone else that can help them or the angels that can help them instead of telling them they just have to leave. It
makes
it respectful to them and a little bit easier for them to handle it too.
Right. Well, another thing, we leave it up to the client to determine that, because if it's a family member that's just sticking around kind of in a guardian fashion, then, you know, that's up to the family member, the people who lives in the house, to decide whether they want that person to move on or not. So really, we leave that totally up to the client. We do not force it. We do not say we're coming in here to get rid of everything you have in the house. It's really up to the client and what they want.
Yeah, and that should be the bottom line. What do you want out of the investigation? Do you just want to know that they're really here? And, you know, if that's all they want, sometimes that makes it, you know, that much easier for them to live with it, just to be have that acknowledgement from an outside source.
Exactly.
Yeah. I didn't know you did that, to be honest with you. That's even more impressive to know. And, I mean, I knew about, you talked about it briefly to me, but I didn't know that much detail. Like you just went into, and that's great. One of the articles on the Shadowlands, you wrote about ghosts and children,
mm-hmm.
and kind of like it's, you know, it's a subject that a lot of investigators would rather not deal with, or puts them off a little bit when they see that there's, you know, children involved in the investigation. And you kind of had some you know, even tips in there for the parents on how to deal with your child reporting that they're seeing something. Yeah. Could you give us some tips or something that anybody listening, maybe if they're in the same situation, could use with their children? Or like things to do and not to do?
Yeah, one thing, the number one thing with that is to believe in your child. Unless they're known to make up tales and lie, and usually young children, 2, 3, 4, they have to be really pushed into a corner to lie about a ghost. And so you have to believe in them. You have to believe in what they're saying. And there is a certain way to go about it so that you don't scare them, but keep that door open so that they can continue to experience the paranormal. I don't feel that a child should have a door closed on that, because they're going to grow up and maybe want that skill. You know, but there's a way to make a child less scared. You just explain to them that they're just a person that they're seeing without a body, without an actual physical body, that they're not there to hurt anyone, that mostly they're just there to be acknowledged. And since a child hasn't been taught yet that what they're seeing, they're doubting. They don't doubt what they see yet. That comes with time. I think children are more apt to see spirits. And so if you believe in them and you try to explain that no ghost is going to hurt a child, then they keep that door open and can explain to their parents further what they're seeing and what they're experiencing, rather than being doubted and start to doubt their own what they're seeing.
Do you think that really happens to a lot of people, where, you know, I believe that we all have the ability to think it's the, you know, what we've been taught and our systems that are kind of like imprinted from our parents.
I think from a very early age, if we start to I know I did. If we start to experience things from a very early age, and if your parents do not believe in that or don't want to or feel that you may be scared of it, they're going to tell you, oh, you're just dreaming, or it's just your imagination. And I think that closes the door to a lot of children who are actually experiencing the paranormal. Because if they're told it's their imagination and they're told it's just a dream, then they start to doubt what they see themselves. And pretty soon they close the door themselves. They just block that skill out because they doubt themselves.
Let's talk a little bit about the Shadowlands. Might not be aware that the Shadowlands was set up in 1994. The very first paranormal website on the internet. When I designed that website, everything was still in black and white, and you couldn't put pictures on web pages yet. That's how old it goes back. Had the first UFO and Bigfoot and ghost stories. And the page that really took off was the Ghost and Hauntings page. And Tina's been helping me with that. We've been around for 16 years, and she's been with us for 14. So can you tell us a little bit of like how you got started with that, and maybe things that you've seen change over the years in the ghost field? Because you've seen the explosion of what the internet's done.
Oh, yeah.
Used to be around, and how many people are around now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I first started at the Shadowlands by going into, I typed ghost in, and Shadowlands was the first one that popped up. And so I went and I read the stories all the way through, and then I noticed that you were having a chat, and I decided to go, and I met you through that chat and a person named Dave Umbrier. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah.
Okay. And he, after listening or after reading what I was typing about my experiences, Dave said online to you, well, you had been looking for someone to help you. And so that's how I got started in the Shadowlands. And I haven't left yet. Don't intend to either. But what I've seen change a lot is people are watching a lot of these ghost shows that are coming out, and they're getting the wrong idea of how we actually do things.
Absolutely.
And, excuse me?
Absolutely.
And they're watching these shows and saying, I can do that. And they're going out not only putting clients and themselves in danger, but they may be actually disturbing the paranormal itself by going in and not knowing what they're doing. Provoking is a big thing that a lot of people do that they shouldn't unless they know what they're doing. You can get attachments that way. You can bring things home with you. It's just sad that it's come to that, but I understand why they do that on TV, you know, but it's hurting a lot of clients out there too.
I think people get caught up in reality TV, and there's a lot of people out there that don't realize that, I mean, it's part reality, but it's still a TV show and it's still meant for entertainment. Mm-hmm. So certainly,
right.
if anyone out there believes that, you know, within 60 minutes a case is solved, you know, that's, you know, ridiculous.
But it doesn't happen that way.
And they have to do certain things just to, you know, make the show more interesting, because a lot of what we do is sitting in the dark for hours with nothing happening, and that wouldn't be very fun for anyone watching TV. But people just, I always tell people when I see them starting to head down that road, you wouldn't watch a TV show about, you know, how to repair your house and how to put a new roof on, and watch it in an hour and then go out and try it yourself, because you're probably going to have a lot of leaks. Same thing when it goes to watching these shows. You need to still find out really what you're doing, you know, because a lot of the stuff they are doing just for TV.
And TV.
Oh, go ahead. I know that your group uses a lot of protection, and so does mine. And unless you know every little detail of how to protect yourself and how to keep yourself safe, then it's dangerous to go into a situation like that without the information.
Yeah, and these shows don't show you the before and after, what they do before to get prepared and what they do afterwards to kind of cleanse themselves of everything.
Exactly.
In the research field, I mean, I think when we first started, we started listing local groups by state. And there, you know, there really wasn't that many to list at the time.
Exactly. Yeah, you're right.
The bulk of the email for the Shadowlands, you see the groups coming in. I mean, besides the volume changing, has the attitude or anything else changed over the years?
Well, yeah, because when we first started, everybody was volunteer basis. Everybody wanted to get out and do this, you know, to help people. And then suddenly we started seeing a lot of groups coming in and saying, okay, we're going to charge for this and we're going to charge for that. And that really became a problem. And then you decided, and I agree that, you know, we aren't going to list people on the Shadowlands groups that charge. We don't. How can you charge for evidence that you cannot realistically prove without a doubt that this exists? And that's something that you and I have always believed in. So
I know you wrote an article last year about that in particular. A group that you ran into that was kind of like surprising the clients after they made the initial contact and did some of the work, and then kind of proposed a bill to them or a price for their services.
Right, or they would charge for evidence collected, or they would charge for cleansings. Things like that you really have no control over in the first place, and no way to prove, like I said, without a doubt, that ghosts exist. So how can you charge for evidence collected when you can't prove for sure that's a real ghost on that piece of film or piece of video or whatever?
Plus, some of these clients, it's taken them so long to get up the nerve to actually ask somebody to come out and help them. how can you then tell them that they need to pay you to do it, you know?
Right, and they're scared anyway in a situation that they have no control over.
Right.
And then to be hit up with that after a group walks into their house, it's just not right.
What were they charging per orb photo? I'd love to know that.
I never came across any group that charged just per orb photo.
Store, I can shake up and take a bunch of orb photos. If I'm getting by the orb, you know, I'm set.
Right. I think we all would be.
I don't know where that's ever come from, but we've always gotten that question. I remember even from the very beginning how they want to. This is what I want to do for my career. I want to be like a ghost researcher, and they're very disappointed when they find out that, you know, the majority of the people actually make no money from this at all, especially from the investigations. I think that the accepted thing is if it's an extra long drive or, you know, if you have to stay over maybe for travel and expenses like that. But that's it, even in extreme cases. Most groups now have gone, you know, to be a nonprofit. And you would think that by the amount of people who are out there doing that, that that would be like the prevalent wisdom that's out there. But there's still groups that come out, and we just ran into one just recently that...
here in the store, yeah.
Yeah, they were charging $200 or $250 an investigation.
$200 an investigation, and because he didn't have his DVR up and running, he had to give the client money back, so he wanted us to reimburse him for it. Obviously, that didn't happen.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, I always tell people who write into the channel ends that the only way you're ever going to make any money on this is if you hit the lecture circuit. And you've got to build up a name for yourself before you can go that route.
Even with the books now, too. I see a lot. The book field now is just flooded with books out there. And most of them are really good with, you know, without local hauntings or focusing on a different area, because you guys were involved with the book too, right?
Right. We were asked by an author a couple years ago if she could follow us around and just kind of listen to our stories of our investigations. Her name was Tracy Austin Peters, and she wrote a book about LVSSI called Welcome to Haunted Las Vegas. And it basically involves our investigations from the first investigation that my husband and I ever went on at Nellis Air Force Base to the last one that she went on with us, the author, and watched us do what we do.
You've done some TV stuff too, haven't you? I believe we filmed for the same show that when was cutting us out of the final edit.
Right, we ended up on the floor, I think.
Hey, Penn, you were doing something with Frank Sinatra, weren't you? Or he stayed in the hotel or something like that?
Yeah, the strip is really haunted. The unfortunate thing about that is that here in Las Vegas, they don't need to advertise that bit of information to get tourists to come. So they'd rather brush that under the rug and not let it be known that, yes, they do have ghosts in some of the older hotels down on the strip.
Oh, by the way, for an FYI to everybody, the next store that will be opening, the next Ghost Hunter store physical location that will be opening, will be in the Las Vegas area. So we'll be expanding soon, I imagine.
Hopefully, yeah.
So where exactly on at Nellis? Was it a specific building that you were checking out?
Well, there's been several on the Shadowlands in our haunted places. We have several places listed from Nellis Air Force Base, and I can't give you the exact building, but I can tell you that my husband and I were allowed to go in and investigate one building, and it was the very first EVP I ever received. It was pretty cool. We were walking. We had heard that there was a soldier walking up and down the hallway. And so I placed my audio recorder in the hallway, and we heard the door slam. Well, the door had a combination lock on it, so there was no way. My husband and I were the only two left in the building. There was no way that the door could have opened and shut on its own. And later, listening to the audio, as we're walking down the hallway, we heard something. And I turned to my husband. You can hear me on the audio say, "What was that?" And then in the background, you can hear this, ha, 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 ha. And it wasn't his voice, and it wasn't mine. So, and we were the only two in the building. It was a pretty cool EVP.
I don't know if I like when they're laughing at me.
It depends. If it sounds menacing, I don't care.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's a great experience when you're able to get someplace that's kind of... We had something similar, too, with South Jersey Ghost Research. We did Dover Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm. At,
one of the buildings there, and we were actually asked to come out because they were having issues with alarms always going off, and some of the soldiers out there that were supposed to be doing security there, even though there were motion alarms inside the building, they just stopped going inside. They would just jiggle the doorknob. If it didn't open, that was good enough for them. So, but we had the lights go on and off on us while we were inside. So it was a still interesting event. But there, yeah, I understand where you're not allowed to give specifics about
right, location. Right, and you know, you sign disclosure statements and things like that. And while you can give out details of what actually happened in the building, you can't give the building's exact location.
You know, I saw some, I'm looking at some of your other articles too, and you did a great one about, like, do ghosts have emotional feelings?
Mm-hmm.
And that almost goes right to the point now. I mean, this you wrote that a couple years ago, but about the people who are doing the provoking and stuff that, you know, you're dealing with still a sentient being that does have feelings.
Right. Right. Well, the feelings, the emotions don't die when the body dies. It continues on. And so you shouldn't really try to make them mad, because they still have that anger button and they still have that sad button. And you should go into every investigation with respect to the spirit and the client. You know, you should, if you respect them, they're going to respect you.
It's words of wisdom everyone could live by there.
Yeah, and definitely respect the client, because you get to leave and they don't. They still have to deal with that spirit after you're gone.
That's right. And, well, and that's the big number one thing. But it also, they can help lead other people to your group that may need help too. Word of mouth is everything in this field, everything. And if you don't build up your own reputation by treating the client and the spirit with respect, then you're not going to make it very far.
Do you have any other words of advice for new groups starting out? I mean, we get questions like that all the time too. Like, me and my friends want to start a group, and what do we do now?
I always lead them to your Ghost Hunting 101 on the Shadowlands. That's where I send them first. And I tell them that if they follow that, then they'll be off to a great start.
Is there any equipment you recommend, like, for new people starting out?
Well, I would start out with an EMF detector. Digital camera and audio recorder. Those would be the three big things. And then, you know, you go on to the bigger things later. But start out with just the basics and see if you can handle just three pieces of equipment. Because let me tell you, if you're just two people out there in the field and you're just starting with two people and you've got 16 pieces of equipment, you're not going to be able to handle it.
And we see a lot of people coming into the store that, you know, and they gear up. I make sure I explain to them that, you know, if you're going out, you already have places lined up for investigating that you're taking, mm-hmm. the more new equipment you're bringing at first, there's a learning curve. You need to learn how to use that. You got to know how to use all that stuff before you get there, because the investigation is not necessarily the best place to try to figure out, especially if it's for somebody, like even a historical place or, you know, someone in the house. You know, it would be worse if they're just looking at you, you know, and you're their hope, giving them some answers of some kind, and they're looking at you struggling using your equipment. Yeah, you know, that might be a problem.
Right.
That always leads me back to my, you know, my that recent article I put on the Shadowlands too about you should, if you're going to be on TV, make sure you at least know how to use the equipment you're using on TV.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of embarrassing when we see And a lot of it does have to do with the producers. I'll defend a lot of the guys that are on the shows, guys and gals on the shows. The producers like certain pieces of equipment that make special noises and seem more dramatic than others. But
bells and whistles.
In fact, what they're doing is they're, you know, people are learning from those shows, even though it might not be the best place to learn, and they're seeing the equipment misused, and how many people do they teach throughout the years now and pass along the info, and they're completely telling people, you know, potentially hundreds and hundreds of people out there have learned to use certain pieces of equipment, you know, the tri-field EM meter especially, and none of them are using it correctly, and it's all just because maybe one person did it for a producer on the show, and you know, it's not necessary that, you know, sometimes it's, you gotta, can't compromise your integrity for just for certain things for the entertainment.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I also tell people who come to the Shadowlands that they should try public haunted places first with their equipment. Like out here, we have the Queen Mary, the Winchester Mansion, the Whaley House, that they allow you to bring your own equipment in and tour the places. And if you start out on places like that, I think you're better off than going straight to a client's house right from the get-go, because you don't know what you're doing, and you should go out there and practice with the things, the pieces of equipment, and dealing with spirits before you go in and try to help somebody who's scared in their situation, they're scared in their own home.
And even, you know, professional athletes, there's training camp
right before
each season.
Right.
It's like, I'm sure these guys didn't forget how to play football or baseball, but they still go and do training camp each year. You can't practice enough, and no matter how long you've been doing it, there's always new pieces of equipment, or you can learn from how to do something differently and maybe better than you've been doing it. I always keep that in mind. I've been doing it for 25 years, and I'm always going to learn something new, because there are new experts in this field, but you definitely need to know what you're doing before you go into a house.
And they come out with new equipment like every week, so you have to keep up with it all.
Right.
You mentioned just the Whaley House now. I forgot you guys were in driving distance of going out that direction.
Oh, no, I haven't been. I haven't been. I want to, but I haven't been there.
Are there any other famous locations that you've been to that you can talk about?
No. I'm sorry. No, the ones that I have been to have asked us not to say anything about where we've been. So
we get that a lot, too, with a lot of times we get called in by the people that work there.
Mm-hmm.
We treat them just as if we would a house. Where you kind of have to. It's a private client, and while people, I know, you want to get that good AVP, you want to get a good photo, but when you're doing work for someone else, you kind of have to put that aside. So you're sacrificing a little bit to do what you're supposed to be doing when you're working for someone else and they're asking you to come in and help.
Right. My group, we try not to take facial pictures of our clients. We try not to take pictures that would be recognized if we put them on our website of where that locale is. We try to keep them generic as possible of our photos and our videos so that we can say, well, what can we use the information about this haunting on our website as long as we don't include your faces or your address. And most of our clients are pretty good with that. They're okay with that.
Now, do you find posting your investigations like that, does that help other clients now feel more comfortable with, like, contacting you and working with you?
Generally, when we have a client, they want to try and give us something when it's all said and done, when we have helped the spirit cross over, or we have discovered that, you know, yes, your house has activity. They usually want to try to give us something, money or buy us a piece of equipment or something. And what we do is we turn around and say, you know, the best thing you could do for us is by writing us a letter stating how you felt about us being in your home. And then we'll post it, leaving your name off. We'll post it on a site, and that'll help other people pick up the phone or send that email that may be just a little bit scared to do so.
Yeah, that's a great idea, actually. I also, with people doing historic places, when you refer them to start with those kind of places, when you go to those places, if you act professionally, maybe even send them a report of what you found, because a lot of groups go out to those historic places for the fun of it. But sending a simple thank you letter and what you found there during your investigation goes a long way, and you wind up getting them as references that will put you in more places. And also, some people in private houses, they see, okay, if this museum or if this historic location trusted you, then I guess they're okay.
Right. But we try to do that for every client that we visit. We try to give a final report to, whether it's a famous place or it's just a client's home. We give a final report to every client we've ever had.
Have you given like a packet or something with photos and video, or just a written report? What kind of thing do you give them?
We do a final report. We write up what we experienced and what we captured on in evidence, and then we give them a copy of the actual evidence itself. We give them a DVD and audio and photos as well.
Now, when you present that to them, do you go out there? Do you mail it to them?
We actually meet face-to-face, so if they have any other further questions or activity has started back up again, then they can ask us right then and there, you know, what should we do next.
How long do you stay in contact with your clients and the people you've helped?
It really depends. They always have my phone number. They always have my email address. And so they can contact me years afterwards if they want to. Basically, it's from the first beginning meeting to the final. And if they have any questions at the final, we'll either set up another meeting to meet at their house or their building that's got activity. Or if they're okay with everything that went on, then we tell them to stay in touch. And some of them do, some of them don't. You know, I think it's that fear of okay, everything's fine in my house. If I contact them again, it may not be. So so some of them do stay with us in contact, and some of them don't. But it's usually the duration of the walkthrough and the first meeting and all of that. We generally don't meet with them at their home or area that's haunted. We'll pick a local place so that they can get to know us before they invite us to their home.
Which is always something good, because they're strangers to you two, we're strangers to them.
That's right.
A perfect way to meet them, so you get that uncomfortable feeling out of the way, because there's always some anxiety on their part, even though they might not let on there is. Well, Tina, we're running out of time here, so I wanted to run down some links for everybody. It's lvssi.org.
Right.
That's Tina's, the Las Vegas Society of Supernatural Investigations. Everyone needs to check that website out. If you want to go to the Shadowlands, you'll find my articles, Tina's articles, 16,000 true experiences submitted by people over the past 16 years, galleries, tons of stuff on there.
Haunted
places all over the country and all over the world. That's the Shadowlands.net. From there, you can go to all the different things. There's a Bigfoot page, UFO, but the ghost one's probably the one we spend the most time with. South Jersey Ghost Research website, hauntedhelp.org. And I guess in closing, I'd like to say that it was very nice having you as a guest.
It's nice to do this. It was fun.
A better person for my first radio show hosting.
Yes, thank you very much.
We appreciate it. Also, Marty's tapping on the table next to me that I forgot to give the Ghost Hunter store address. So, theghosthunterstore.com or ghosthunterstore.com, whichever you prefer. You go on the website. You can call us if you have questions too. The store is open every day but Tuesday, and normally either me or Marty are here. So you can always catch us that way, or through email off the Ghost Hunter store, off the Shadowlands, off of LVSSI for Tina, and the Shadowlands for me and Tina. So there's multiple ways. If you guys have any questions or just want to run something by us, show us pictures. We constantly look at pictures and listen to EVPs for people. So it's no problem for us to do that too. We'd like to thank you for listening for I think it went fairly well for our first time.
I think it did well. Once we got it started, yes.
Special thanks to our other hosts on the network that kind of helped us get through the snafu here so we could broadcast the first show.
Yes, thank you.
And we'll see you again in 2 weeks.